Welcome to Beanstalk Global with the Women in Food and Farming April broadcast. Christine, say hello to everyone.
Hello, everybody. Nice to see you back. Hope you had a good Easter.
Yeah, so we're just talking in our green room that it's snowing currently with Christine, but we've got sun here in Bury St Edmunds, but we seem to have a right old mixture at the moment of weathers, but hopefully everything is going to be pointed towards sun. So today we are speaking on culture and values, and a little bit later we're going to bring in our fantastic guest speaker as per the invite of Christine, Beverly Dixon. But just for everyone on the catch-up YouTube and podcast, let's just give a little bit of a background to Christine's group, Women in Food and Farming. So this is a group of professional women in food, agriculture, and the land-based industries at all stages of their careers. They get together to discuss business issues, support each other via mentorship and advice, and help generate networks of contacts that might be useful to themselves and their businesses. Founded in 2011 by Christine Takeon, CBE, the group started back in 2011, just said that, we're just five women, and has now grown to over 500 members. So that's one thing, Christine and I wanted to highlight. If you're watching and you're not a member of Women in Food and Farming, please do become a member. It's very easy. If you go and find Claire Smith, you might be very lucky and be with her in the breakout rooms a little bit later. Or if you look up Claire Smith on LinkedIn, or if you go to More People, and Women in Food and Farming on Google, that takes you straight to Claire's landing page on the More People website, and you can sign up to join the group. So Christine is known to many as the first grocery-coded educator and head of the co-op's farming business. She's also just been appointed chair of Assured Food Standards, which operates the Red Tractor Assurance Scheme, amongst other roles. In our strange times, Beanstalk is very proud to offer our extensive platforms to allow the Women in Food and Farming group to continue their conversation and debate, and encourage new members ongoing to join them, be that on our virtual broadcast series. So in our April broadcast, we have the great pleasure of having Beverly on, and we're going to be discussing culture and values within business and our own lives. Just before we go live with that, Christine, how are you? What are you seeing? From what I can see over the last month, you've been very, very busy. I suppose you're getting right into the blood and bullets of your Red Tractor role, are you?
I think I'm inside the engine of the Red Tractor, Max. They launched a consultation on the new standards on the day I joined, and nobody told me it was going to happen. And it's been a little bit of a bloodbath with the team pretty much being the punch ball. And so I've had to get engrossed in the whole workings of it in a much more full and share normally would, to sort of help find the way forward. But I've always liked a challenge. I just didn't realize I was taking one on.
No, you stole my words. If anyone was up for that job, as we said right at the beginning when it was nominated that you got the role, Christine, as we said at the time, there aren't many people that could do such a position. And you look at some other organisations that are going through a bit of heartache at the moment. I think Red Tractor's in a very good position with yourself. So let's get on to today, Christine. Why did you want to look at culture and values? Because I suppose in your background, this is something that's been fundamentally key to you and the businesses that you've been associated with. Yeah.
I wanted to correct one thing that you said. You said it was my group. I don't think it's my group. It's everybody's group. And when we have our little breakout groups at the end, we've got lots of people who are part of the steering group who will listen. And if you say you're interested in something, we'll pick it up as an idea. So the whole idea of having a talk on culture was something that was discussed in one of those groups. And I thought, I know just the person I want to talk about that, because I've been, you know, I would say over the last 15 years, I've been hugely impressed by the culture at G's and trying to understand it. I have recruited people from there. I've tried to recruit people from there. And I've loved, I mean, one of the people I did recruit actually went and asked John Shropshire's advice as to whether he should join the business or not. I mean, the loyalty to that business is something I have not witnessed anywhere else.
Yes, and you think of our tenure, Christine, over the last 25 years of agricultural businesses and fresh produce businesses, and you always see this cycle of businesses grow, fall away. If there's been one stable factor within agribusiness and fresh produce, it's definitely been G's. And why is that? Because of the people. Shall we bring Beverly in, Christine?
Yeah.
Beverly, can you come in, please? So, Christine, can you remember how you first met Beverly?
No, that's not fair. He asked me earlier and I said I couldn't remember, and Bev said she could. So therefore, he knew I didn't know the answer to that. Bev, how did we meet?
Beverly, just turn on your ears, please. Beverly,
just on mute at the moment.
That phrase that we were all going to avoid.
Thank you.
She said, okay.
Turn on my ears. That was getting a bit confusing already. I've got the headset on. Well, it's great to see everyone here. And so how did we meet, Christine? Well, I think it was one of these early events of women in agriculture when we were in the Farmers Club. And at that point, I remember it being it was a great evening. And I think actually Emily Norton talked about her leadership course that, in fact, have we just been discussing that?
She delivery one. Yeah, that's right.
She did. And anyway, great evening. And at that point, I was part of the board of MDS, and we were looking to recruit a new non-executive chairman for MDS. And I tried to persuade you at that point that it would be a good idea. And I remember you were so busy, so diligent in doing what you were doing. You were saying, no, I haven't got time for this. Anyway, I didn't let her get away with that. And eventually, Christine did apply. And obviously, among the amazing skills that she's got and experience, there was one notable thing about the interview that I will always remember: the shoes she was wearing.
Oh, no. God.
And in fact, if you ever get the opportunity to be with Christine face to face, do have a look at her shoes. They're bound to be wacky. So, Christine, yeah, you've been, well, since then, we actually then went traveling to Spain. And that was through the connection with MDS. And we talked to the industry association there, and they still talk about Christine's presentation. And we also visited the G's business. So I suppose got to know each other better then.
Fantastic. Christine, we've got to ask now, what shoes have you got on?
They aren't that interesting, but I can show you. But I did. At least they're not my slippers.
Fantastic. What a way to introduce each other. So come on, let's get into this. Christine, can I just ask you to turn off your video and also your audio? Because your audio is, I think, a bit scratchy because of the snow outside. So Beverly, if it's okay, just for everyone, especially on the podcast, they really are keen to hear people's background. It's just let me give the background on yourself. So as we've already intimated, Beverly's incredibly well known and regarded. She's Group HR Director at G's, which is part of the Shropshire Group. They grow, pack, distribute and sell salad and vegetables to UK, European and American supermarkets and wholesalers. Inspired by the commercial and international focus of her role, she leads teams delivering HR in UK, Europe, Africa and the USA. From her knowledge base gained in FMCG, telecoms and consultancy, she's highly involved in M&A, business improvement programs and influencing policy makers. She's very well regarded for having a creative approach to HR, underpinned by commercial outlook and appreciation of working with a multicultural team in the UK and overseas and developing sustainable business through people. But if it's okay to mention, I was just thinking back about your telecoms background, and I remember years ago going to Cranford University bash, and we had a senior level individual from BT. I can't remember his name. I'm sure you'd know of him. And he said that culture and values, it's so difficult to create a business with positive culture and values if you've got a business of over 500 people. It's even more difficult to create culture and value within a business if you're on a multi-site basis and with different units with over 500 people. So you've got double trouble, he said. Then someone said, well, what if you've got some businesses that are overseas? And he said, well, you've got triple trouble. And if you look at G's, that's exactly what you've got. So I think all credit to yourself and your colleagues that you are remarkable as a group because you are so spread. What's the answer on an HR perspective? I wouldn't even know how to begin. How do you keep it all together, Beverly?
Well, hopefully in this conversation, we'll kind of explore that. And I'm happy to sort of unpick it and have the conversation with you, Max, and share the odd slide that I've got that will help explain kind of the concepts behind some of the things that I'm going to talk about as we go through. But culture and values, they are so important, aren't they? And so difficult to get right. But I think, to be honest, when you're working somewhere and your own values align with the culture and values of that business. You intuitively know when it's right, but equally, you know when it's wrong. And it's quite hard to put your finger on, but you're either aligned with that business or not. Now, I don't think it's necessarily always as black and white as that, because I think our personal values have to be in congruence with the organization's culture, so that, you know, it's quite easy to connect with that business. But if by chance they're not, maybe you probably wouldn't even apply for that sector, that business, that organization in the first place. So it's a tough one. But I think, you know, some of the quiz questions that we've got lined up will just help illustrate some of that.
Beverly, we didn't tell everyone there's a quiz.
Oh, there's a quiz.
It's like a Tuesday night down the Royal Oak. We're going to have a quiz. The one thing that we're picking up, and we did discuss it with other broadcasts, that I think you might be involved in with us, that said the younger generation are very keen to be aligned to businesses that are doing good. And it's interesting with my recruitment hat on. I've always had a bit of a throwaway question as to name me the three top companies that you'd like to be aligned to on an ag and a fresh produce perspective. And over the last 10 years, G's has always been in that top three. Whilst there's others that, well, just like in any sector of businesses, people don't really want to be aligned to it. And I think, again, we've had this conversation that you find it sometimes a bit difficult to attract people because of your location, because your location is, well, it's not London, is it? And it's a glorious area, but it is relatively remote, relatively rural, but it's not buzzing. And for you to be able to be in my de facto top three of fresh produce companies to be aligned to, again, it comes to this culture and values element. So what do you want to go into the quiz now, or do you want me to keep going? How do you like to play this, Beverly?
Let's have a little look at this quiz. Let's see if we can share the screen and make it work. And
our quiz master tonight is.
Yeah.
And the prize is going to be a tin of dog biscuits.
Yeah, it might be. there we go. Go for you. And slideshow. Right, Max, your first question.
Okay, everyone. Question A, what percentage of adults would not apply to an organisation unless its values aligned with their own personal values? Question A.
Has everybody thought of an answer? Put it in the chat. If we do have chat, we probably don't, do we?
We do. We have chat. Put it in the chat, everyone.
Put it in the chat.
Or scribble it down on that blank envelope next to you.
Shall I go for the answer yet?
Yep. 73%. What percentage of adults would not apply to an organisation? Yeah, and again, especially with this younger generation, we're seeing this drive of people wanting to do good, and they can do good by being aligned to businesses that are doing good. So I think there's a definite drive, Beverly, in the respect of societal behavioural change on this aspect. So it's fascinating that.
Let's go for the next one.
So B, what percentage of adults would look for a job elsewhere if their current organization's culture deteriorates? Let's go for that again. B, what percentage of adults would look for a job elsewhere if their current organization culture deteriorates? Oh, that's a fascinating question, Beverly. Yeah. I'm thinking of some of the businesses that are out there, the likes of Deliveroo, Uber, Amazon, some of the stories that have been coming out over the weekend about some of those organisations. And if you were in there from the start, how would you feel about it in the future?
Let's go.
71%. Wow. So that's fascinating that even adults, if they've got that opportunity, would look to go elsewhere if the culture deteriorates. Okay, let's go for...
Wait for this one. Go.
C, what percentage of leaders think that they understand their organization's culture? Say that again. C, what percentage of leaders think that they understand the organization's culture? So what do you think, everyone? Wow, look at all those numbers. 90, 40, 65, 60, 50... Come on, Beverly.
Well, wait for this.
What percentage of leaders think they understand the organization's culture? 28%. Wow. Well, there's there's something that we always say in with my recruitment head on, back on, that if you want to find out, Beverly, what's going on in a business, don't ask the boss, ask the forklift driver, because they know absolutely everything. It's a bit of a glib response, but the people within the business know so much more. And you must see the same thing, that when I meet some senior leaders, when you actually get a rapport with them, you find out they're actually quite commercially lonely. They don't know what's going on in their own businesses, let alone outside, because people perhaps are just telling them what they want to hear. And if you've got a poor leader who doesn't recognize that, they're going to steer the boat in that particular direction.
Well, I think it's interesting that you say that, because if you kind of read any strategy books, you'll know that Peter Drucker, he always quotes, he's got a brilliant snappy sentence where he says, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And if you think about how much time our leaders spend working out what the strategy is, having strategy away days, then working out how to implement it, who to get involved, how it's all going to happen. But yet what he's saying is the people are the most important aspect of implementing any strategy. And if the people are not aligned with that, with the company values and the culture, then one, the strategy won't get implemented or derailed, or two, it will it won't be real. It's all about efficacy, isn't it? So I think, you know, those quiz questions illustrate that if people don't think things are genuine and real, they'll vote with their feet. They will leave. Either they won't apply and they'll go elsewhere, or they will vote with their feet once they're with you. So I think it's really important that culture is kind of at the forefront of everyone's mind, and certainly the leaders of the business, and helping them to understand how much they can affect culture is kind of top of our list when it comes to any of our leadership development. And I also reference Edgar Schein. I don't know if this is kind of useful, but he talks about the most important thing a leader can do is to develop the culture of an organization. And if you don't do that, he says, the culture will manage you. And furthermore, you might not even notice that it is managing you. So in other words, if you're not focused and paying attention to these things and taking those temperature checks around the business and really talking and listening to the people that you're working with to understand what it is that they want and how they feel and where they think there's any incongruence, then it could all be happening around you without you even noticing. And that's when people will potentially leave or not apply, and certainly or derail some of the direction in which you want to go. So it's so important, and yet it's so difficult to kind of exactly nail down and put your finger on. But it is something that we certainly kind of build awareness through our development programs with our leaders.
So with the G's group, if it's okay, and tell me if it's not appropriate, but just using that as an example, did the culture and the values of the G's group, did that start with John Shropshire's father? Mm. And so it's just been the foundation's been there right from the get-go. Or was it John Shropshire? Or was it John Shropshire and you? How did it positively manifest itself within your group?
Okay, so let's kind of tell the story of the link between values and culture. So I like the metaphor really of kind of a buoy in the sea. That's a nautical buoy. So if you think about if several buoys are anchored in the sea, then the anchor is the values. And that those values don't change. They're anchored into the sand at the bottom of the sea. And whatever is happening on top of the water, however choppy it gets, the buoys may go slightly away. There might be slightly some tension on the ropes, but they don't go too far away from those core values. And then when it's a still mill pond, the buoys will be directly aligned above the values, and that's when there's least tension on the cord. So in a family business like G's, then it is the values are formed by the family values. Now, of course, it can all adjust and the culture can float around a little bit on top of the water, but those core values are the Shropshire's family values. And certainly, you know, you mentioned John Shropshire. He will talk about the G's company values as, well, their trust, efficiency, quality, can do and expertise. But if you think about the trust one, that's the one that we kind of pay real attention to and really focus on. And one of the kind of descriptors of our trust is to treat others as you'd like to be treated yourself. And that is one of Guy Shropshire, so the founder of the business's sayings. So yes, well and truly anchored by the Shropshire family. And if you think about then the buoys on top of the water, yeah, may float around a little bit and adjust depending on kind of all sorts of things which we could talk about, which are, you know, maybe different parts of the business in different countries in which we work in.
And I think your analogy of those boys is fantastic. I've got this expression in my head about train the trainer. And do you spend a lot of time with your senior leaders in the UK and overseas just making sure, reinforcing those values so they get it, so that they're on the seabed holding that chain with all of their team? Or do they just get it naturally? How does that work, please?
No, it does get reinforced. So In thinking about another thing I'll chuck in case anybody wants to look these things up afterwards, but Johnson and Scholes have a really nice kind of analysis called a cultural web. And you can walk around this culture web. And some of the things that are in place on that web would be kind of the rituals and the symbols and the processes and policies that, and you know, talking about power structures, which is all the different influences that you were talking about, Max. But if you think about some of the policies and practices, they serve to reinforce the values. So everybody's EPR, so employee performance review appraisals, all come back to the values. So it's as much about how you do business as well as what you're doing. So yeah, you know, we need you to deliver objectives and targets that people have been set. However, it's got to be in a way in which is fitting with the values. So half of everyone's annual appraisal, if not more frequently than that, is divided into how and what. That's just one example. But it's not to say that we can't get better. I mean, we're really proud of our culture and our values, and we work hard to keep them embedded. But we know that the more we challenge ourselves, the better it can be. And quite recently, I ran a session with some of our early careers group, and they were talking about, you know, what sort of culture would you like G's to be? And it's not way off mark as to where it is now. But as you can imagine, with the Generation Z, as you mentioned earlier, the younger people, they want more flexibility, more working from home, everything's digital, you know, less process and control, all those things. So then we then can have a conversation using the culture web about, well, okay, where are we now? If that's where we want to get to for the Generation Zs, what sort of things will we have to nudge and change? But it's all anchored back into the values. So I don't want it to sound as though you can completely change a culture and be totally opposite to where you started. But I think, you know, keep those anchored, keep those values anchored, and then the buoys on the top with illustrate the culture can actually move slightly depending on who it is that you're working with.
I think that's, again, really interesting that you have asked a percentage of your team what culture do they want within your business. I bet if we ask everyone else on this call, how often have we been asked that in the last 2-3 years with the businesses that we're involved with, whatever our age group, what culture would you like within this business? Because I do sometimes fear that agribusiness and fresh produce, especially like the fresh produce, because it's we're living day by day, especially with the past year. Those sort of questions never get asked. But going back to the point that you were making at the beginning, that you've got to be very careful that you're leading the culture of the business and the business isn't leading you potentially down the wrong route. I suppose probably that comes on to the next inevitable question. If you had one of the people on the call today, or there was a business that you knew within the sector that was struggling with culture and values, what would your recommendation be to go in and to secure those buoys for them when currently they're adrift, they're a raging storm? How would you assist them?
I think I'd start with kind of clarifying and confirming what the values are. And making sure that what's written, say, on a piece of paper or on all the notice boards and things like that are truly what people are living and reinforcing. So, you know, we've already talked about the leaders having a massive influence on the authenticity of culture and values of a business, because whatever they are talking about, whatever they report on, whatever they're interested in, illustrates the importance of those things to all colleagues. Now, if that's completely different to what's written on the piece of paper or the notices on the wall, then that's where you get the incongruence. So I think I'd probably start there and just really kind of reaffirm what the company's values are and maybe describe them in a way in which people can understand. And then I would go out and talk to people. And talk to people about, you know, what do these values mean to them? And don't forget, culture is a kind of how things are done around here. So if you've got, you know, two or three or four or five values, what does that mean in terms of the way things are done around here? You know, where would we be working? What sort of things we'll be doing? How would your performance be measured? What, you know, access to equipment would you have? All those sorts of simple things. What would people be wearing? You know, sometimes in an organization, it's about uniform.
Yeah. Wow. Well, and is this a job for HR or is this a job for the senior leadership team, or is it a combination, or does it all just depend on the particular business center in question?
I think it depends on the business, doesn't it? It's undoubtedly a job for the leaders of the business, without doubt. And more often than not, people or HR professionals will have kind of worked in and around this field and therefore will be able to assist and guide and direct and put things in place. But it's well and truly in the lap of the leaders of the business, I would say, because of the influence that they have.
And so, Beverly, I don't want to lead the witness again, but do you think agribusiness, fresh produce, is relatively unsophisticated in comparison to some of the other sectors that you've been involved in, like telecoms? How we do a lot more?
I don't think it's unsophisticated, but it's different. So in my experience, so I've worked mainly in retail, I've met in fresh produce, I've been a consultant and so kind of experienced lots of different businesses. But depending on the business model, so, you know, certainly a not-for-profit business will have a different culture to a FTSE 100 because they're driven by different things. And you'll find that the people that work in those businesses are motivated by different things. And that's because they're aligning their own value system with the business model before they even start. So it's not that any different sector or organization is less sophisticated than another. It's just different depending on that business model, who works there, where they're working, which part of the country they're operating in, which country in total they're operating in, and what the people's values and experiences, personal attitudes and beliefs are that are among the colleagues. So I don't think it's that. I think it'd be great if all businesses, including fresh produce businesses, could spend more time talking to their colleagues about what's important.
Yep. And I go back to my that Cranfield example that I gave earlier, and you'll be able to, you've probably got the slide like I have somewhere, that it's been shown time and time again that those companies that invest in training and development into their teams see a far faster growth rate, profitability and turnover wise. And I suppose that's a bit of frustration I've got about the fresh produce sector. I won't call it unsophisticated again, but it's just the nature of the beast, especially with the year that we've just had. Yeah. We've seen so many things have to be just pushed aside because there's been an emergency. Mm. But then again, being optimistic, there's such an opportunity now to really grab that culture and those values and to push on through to make a real difference for the business, for the environment, for people, and to do good with the sector.
I think it's just an amazing opportunity, certainly in fresh produce, that we've got to promote what's great about it. Yeah. And it is about the sustainability, the environment, the fact that we're producing fresh, healthy, wholesome food. We couldn't be in a better sector. So to be proud of that and to promote it and get the message over and be good at communicating. And I think that's probably listening and communicating is probably where we can get better. I don't think, you know, generally it's well understood what amazing businesses we're all involved in. Yeah. And that's down to us to talk about it, really.
Beverly, two points on that, on the point of talking about it and promoting it. If you're not aware, this year, 2021, is the FAO, United Nations Year of Fruit and Veg. And we were very privileged to do an interview last week with the director, Marcella, director of collaborations for the FAO and the United Nations. And they got so much passion about it. But just looking at their stats and some of their postings, it seems to be all the nutritionists are behind it. But there's a lot of people within the actual trade that aren't aware that it's the UN FAO 2021 Year of Fruit and Veg. If you just dial that up, hashtag 2021 Year of Fruit and Veg, there's loads of free logos that you can have that you can put on your website with the UN all over it to promote your business so that you can get the halo effect off the back of that. And second point, Beverly, you very kindly gave us a quiz earlier. I was just looking at some of the stats. Guess how many food businesses have been created during this last year of our pandemic? Have a guess.
2,000.
658. And The reason for mentioning that, if those businesses are coming to you because they don't want to be a flash in the pan, they want to be here for the long term. Mm. And you can just imagine what the bulk of those are going to be like in the respect of the foundation that they want to set up. They want to be very, very high on sustainability, very high on the environmental side. With a new business, what would be your advice as to how they can set up culture and values when it's just a team of one, perhaps two, but they want to be 10, 20, 50, people? How would you set up the culture and values with a new food startup, please?
Start to capture it. So what, because probably in those early days, the culture and values, they're probably wearing on their shirt sleeves. It's probably really obvious. So capture it, video shots, you know, little captions, some press releases. What are people saying about you? What stories are people telling about that food business? What stories are you telling about yourself? All of that will stand in good stead for when they do increase to 5, 10, 20, 30 people, because you'll be able to tell the stories and that illustrates the culture.
Well done. And there's the fantastic example, Beverly, of Innocent Drinks. Back in the day when Innocent started up, they were getting upwards of 3,000 applications a month of people wanting to join them because of the culture and values that the three founders had created. So if you could create that magic dust with your new food setup, not only are you going to get the people coming to join you, you're going to get the customers, and if you're looking for it, perhaps the investment as well, do you think?
Yes, yeah, I think and certainly we know through ESG now that investors are more and more monitoring what companies are doing in terms of the whole ESG, people, profit, planet. And so it's becoming as equally important for the financial institutions, which goes a long way to say it says a lot, doesn't it?
It does, totally. Mm. So just to summarize before we bring some of the group back in and before we go to the breakout room, with everything that you've learnt on culture and values within G's Group and your previous background, what would you have done differently within G's to make it even more successful, the whole culture and values piece, please?
That's a really challenging question, Max. I think I would have spent even more time on it. I think it's a kind of never-ending requirement to keep talking to people in different sections, in different groupings of people, and really get to understand what they think and where we can tweak it. Because I think we're just talking about little tweaks can make a massive difference.
Is there a problem though about ROI, return of investment? I can imagine if you've got some grumpy FD and all they're looking at is the bottom right hand corner of the Excel spreadsheet, and you're requesting to spend more time with the team to really major on culture and values, and they say, Beverly, what's the return of investment here? Yeah. We need these people working. We don't need talk shops. We don't need talking shops.
Yeah,
because that's going to happen in lots of businesses. How do you counter that?
Oh, because you've got to keep promoting it. So you put it in kind of the rules and regs as well, don't you? So in, like I say, in the appraisals, you've got to talk about the values in there. And if those leaders are not living up to those values, then, you know, that has an effect. So they know they've got to do it. And it's all about education generally. We all need kind of refocusing, don't we? And kind of pointing in a slightly different direction sometimes. So it is about investing in people as leaders to understand what your role as a leader is. Yeah. And I don't think we can do enough of that either. You know, we don't want to just send somebody on one development program and assume that's it, job done.
Yeah. The best thing about running a business is employing people. The worst thing about running a business is employing people. When you're interviewing people or your team are, can you identify pretty quickly those that have got those cultures and values that will mirror those of the G's group?
Yeah, you become more astute to that. And I'm sure you do too, Max, because you interview people for all kinds of different businesses. So in the questions that you're asking them, how they like to work, what's important to them, you know, what motivates them, you're automatically matching that to the job role or the part of the business, or in fact the whole business that they're applying for. And, you know, I think it's incumbent upon us, even in a job advert or describing the role, to be able to describe what it's really like to work here. And that, in describing that, that's the culture. And that might be the culture of the department or the sector in which you're working, as well as the overall organization.
Beverly, well said. Let's get the rest of the team back in. Christine, Deborah, Eve, Camilla, Kirsty. So we could just have a quick catch up before we go to the breakout rooms. Christine, what do you think? I think Beverly is right on the money. And if they don't already know the G's Group, have a look at the website. And have a look at the social media. And Beverly, we didn't talk about it. I did a great interview with Dan Cross of Love Beats in the States. And he's a completely different character to you, but you could absolutely feel the culture values 4,000 miles away. It was exactly the same with this bearded chap in where is he? The Never Eat.
Rochester.
The East Coast of the States, flogging sugar beet. Christine, what did you think?
I was just going to say, you said look at their website, look at their social media. But if you're trying to attract people into the organisation, there's no point just saying all the right things on the website. If when they scratch the surface, you don't live up to that culture, they will realise and they will go. So it's not about saying the right things. And I think particularly with the generation of people coming out of university, they all care about the ethical, the environmental, the social sides of work. And you can say the right things, but you've got to live them as well.
Totally. And you can see that from various social media postings. So there's a classic example that we used recently. There was a footballer who 10 minutes before the end of a game that he was losing, he posted out on social media that he was really happy that he and his team had won the match. So he's deployed his social media posting to some external company to do it. You can tell very quickly if a business or an individual is authentic or not. Camilla, what's your experience of culture and values within business?
So at the moment I work in a startup, so we're a small team, 10 people. Yeah. So I think that actually puts you in a great perspective, because you're able to build a culture as you go along. And I think for us, we don't talk so much about values, as Beverly said, but something that we do try and keep at the core of everything that we build. We make software for farmers, is trying to think, well, what is the benefit that we're trying to deliver to the farmer, and how are we trying to help them? And so when we build something, we can then tie it back to, is it helping that? Yeah. And I guess that's quite separate to our working culture of how we work together and how we try and collaborate.
And Camilla, are you confident that you've got your boys well planted into the seabed, ready for?
Yeah, I would say I am. In terms of that, where are we trying to go as we grow and develop the product, fitting back to what is our core thing that we're trying to achieve?
Yeah, I'd love what Beverly was saying about that startup question, that just put it all down, do videos, encapsulate it so that you can keep on bringing that out. Eve, what about you? Culture and values? I suppose you've got a slightly decent mentor in the family to have assisted you, but what have you seen externally?
So I work for a global agri-tech business, and I have been for just under a year. But one of the first onboarding documents that I got given was basically on values and the goals for the business. And I was shown the intranet, which had all documents as to kind of people showing that they're striving for those. And I think coming on as a new employee, that was great to kind of know those from the off, so you knew exactly what you were aiming for and what you're working towards. So that's good. But I suppose I had a question actually for Beverly throughout the presentation, and that was whether, with the anchor analogy, does that imply that the values of the business are fixed, and that the culture is changeable, or do both value and culture change as the time goes on?
No, I think the values are fixed. And the values are fixed through, well, certainly in a private organization, because they are the Shropshire family values well and truly fixed. The culture can change. It won't go too far away from the values, otherwise the cord will snap. And if it does, that's it. The culture's gone and broken and completely changed. And maybe that's some of the examples that Max was talking about today, where, you know, the business model has changed halfway through somebody's employment there. That's when the cord snaps. So the values are probably still there. There's probably still, you know, wanting to build a great business, treat people well, all those sorts of things. But the way in which they're doing business has just snapped the cord.
Deborah, Eve, is that okay? Because we're slightly running out of time.
Yeah, yeah.
Deborah, culture and values.
I think very important and growing in importance. I'm very minded that G's engages with the growers that they work with in the same way, not just the employees. So, and growers can be quite acidic if they don't like things, but they are incredibly positive about the benefits of working with G's. So that's impressive. I'm lucky enough to have worked for some big organisations, and to be fair, they have spent a lot of time on engaging and being encompassing with values, which is good to see and reflecting back to say, positive.
And just to say, when we do the record of this, Deborah's son has very kindly made us a video about culture and values, because Deborah, he's involved in the sector, isn't he? And so we haven't got time to roll it, but we're going to put it on the record. So if you want to see that, you'll be able to catch up on that a little bit later. And Kirsty, with your role within MDS, you've got this really eclectic situation that you're looking after. Help me. How many trainees currently?
Currently, nearly 80. Trainees, because we're just going through our changeover, so the old ones are leaving us and the new ones are starting with us. And we're in quite, like you said, we are in quite a unique situation due to the type of people that we are recruiting. We only have them for a short period of time. They are fresh, most of them fresh out of university. And for them, culture and values is really important, but they don't actually work with us, so we have to have really strong values and really share that out. And we do lots around social media in particular, not just us telling the world what our values are, but we get the trainees to take control of our social media so that they can demonstrate that we're actually following through with our values.
Excellent. And are you finding that the trainees that are coming to you, and I know you'll be relatively rigorous in your selection, but are they already there for it? Have they got an appetite to be incredibly positive and upbeat about culture and values?
Absolutely. It's something that we really have over the last 35 years that the program's been running. The values have never changed. We've changed how we do things, but the values have never changed. It's very much what Beverly was saying. And the ones who get onto the program and continue to succeed in it, they have to follow through with our values. It's a two-way street. We give a promise, but they also have to reciprocate.
Fantastic. Everyone, we're slightly running out of time just before we go to the breakout rooms. Christine, is there anything you'd like to say before we move on?
No, I just wanted to thank everybody very much for coming. We built this network on the basis that everybody brought a guest along. So maybe you could think about telling one more person about it if you think that they're useful. There are lots of podcasts that are available on the Beanstalk Global site. Please, in your session, talk about what you might like to have as future topics so I can plan them ahead.
Fantastic. And if you want to join, if you go to More People, if you go find Claire Smith at More People, or just dial in Women in Food and Farming, More People, you go straight to the landing page there. Beverly, you've asked me to summarise, but I'm not going to. You're going to summarise. How would you summarise culture and values in a paragraph, please, Beverly?
That means I have to unmute first. Culture and values of highest importance. Highest importance in should be a highest importance in a leader's mind. Culture eats strategy for breakfast. Don't forget that one. And talk to people about the values. So communicate it in whichever way that's doable and possible. But more importantly, listen to what people are saying to make sure that what is being lived out and the way we're doing business is aligned with the values, and give people the opportunity to kind of have their say about how they'd like it nudged in the future. And then promote all the benefits about our fabulous sector and how it will appeal to all to people with all sorts of different values now, because it is all about fresh food production and the environment and doing things farming in a different way.
Beverly, well said. Yes, if the timing was the timing is so correct, so appropriate now for this sector to just push on, and especially with that positivity and culture and values. Beverly, thank you very much for the masterclass. We'll stop it there. We're going to move out to the breakout room. So the fantastic Kirsty is going to allocate us all. Those listening on the podcast and YouTube, thank you very much. Make sure you subscribe, and we'll see you in May, Kirsty, won't you, for our next Women in Food and Farming. Everyone, thank you very much.